10 minutes after 8, just ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg. Let's check WGTD Sports and Weather. Major League Baseball, the Brewers host the Colorado Rockies in Game 1 of their National League Division Series. It's an afternoon game, 4:07 start at Miller Park. The Braves and Dodgers play in the other NLDS game. That's a 7:30 start. In the American League, the Yankees beat the Oakland A's 7-2 in the wild card game, so that sets up a meeting with the Boston Red Sox in the American League Division Series. That'll start Friday at Fenway Park. NFL Thursday Night Football, Indianapolis takes on New England. In the NHL, the Blackhawks skate in Ottawa tonight. Now the forecast from the National Weather Service, sunny, windy, and cool. Today's high 58, north winds up to 20 miles per hour today. Sun is shining, a little bit of a breeze out of the northwest at 10 miles per hour. It is 51 degrees in Racine, 53 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have two very interesting interviews scheduled for you today. In part one, we're talking sports with the upcoming Racine County Sports Hall of Fame event on the 25th of October. In part two, we're going to be talking about a really intriguing modern take on the ancient Greek play Ajax, which is going to be presented at Carthage College. Sports first, though, and I'm happy to welcome into our studios, first of all, for not the first time at all, but it's been many times that we've had the pleasure of talking with Chris Paulson from the Racine Heritage Museum. And but with joining us for the very first time is a very well-known local sports writer by the name of Gary Wolfel, and I'm sure many of you who follow sports follow Gary's astute writing and reporting and have for many, many years. They both have a really major hand in this thing called the Racine County Sports Hall of Fame, and we're going to be talking about some of the sterling athletes that are part of the Hall of Fame and about the big event that is coming up on October 25th. And I should mention parenthetically that we're hoping sometime in the next couple of weeks to actually be able to speak to a couple of these standout athletes about their career. So, Chris Paulson, Gary Wolfel, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning. Good morning to you as well.
Gary Wolfel, you sound like you have a radio voice, like you've done this once or twice.
A few times over the years, but pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here. And Chris Paulson, you know your way around the microphone, too. I don't mean to imply anything else.
You've taught me well.
Right. Chris, I would really like to hear from you, and Gary, please join in if you like. Have you kind of explain the connection between the Racine Heritage Museum and a sports hall of fame? I think a lot of people from the outside looking in would not sort of understand the connection or how that perhaps even makes sense. It, of course, does make sense, but maybe not for the most obvious of reasons.
Well, it does. It's an interesting juxtaposition when you think about it. But the whole point of the Sports Hall of Fame, from my standpoint, at the museum, is to kind of showcase some wonderful biographical stories of people through athletics have excelled, and then we provide a context for those stories where we can discuss community history, we can talk about sports in terms of social equity over the years, we can talk about sports and athletics in terms of education, and in terms of the area economy, certainly local sports in Racine, where there's such a diversity of industry, and this industrial context is you can look at it as companies sponsoring teams and and really kind of generating an interest in sports and something for employees to do. But sports is also kind of such a wonderful leveling agent for a diverse community where anybody can participate. And of course, the byproduct of that is probably the most wonderful thing that's come out of the sports hall for the museum is that the stories that we celebrate and showcase within the sports hall reflect the diversity of the community that we're in. So it provides a very relational portal to local history for us. Mm.
And I suppose and you've already almost touched on this or have kind of touched on this already, is the fact that sports is often an arena in which our melting pot really melts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you really have people drawing, coming together on a playing field or a court that might in other arenas of their life not be drawn together in the same way or not develop the same close bonds that they do when they are teammates. And I suppose I should add parenthetically, the same thing can happen in a choir or other kinds of arenas, but certainly in sports, it's in a very dramatic fashion that happens.
Right. And that's what we love best about this story.
Right. Gary, did you have any hand in the creation of this Sports Hall of Fame?
Well, I had a finger, maybe, but maybe my little finger. So, well, Roger Kieran was the guy that kind of got the ball rolling, and I just remember this, and I'll always remember it. I was leaving the newspaper around midnight at night, and I thought I'd check my email one more time before I went home or to the local bar for a nightcap. But right. I looked in my email. It was a letter from Roger, and he goes, "Are you interested in starting up a Sports Hall of Fame?" And it was so ironic because it's one of those things I have thought many times over the years, going back probably 15, 20, 30 years ago. And a friend of mine, the sports editor of the Janesville Gazette, a guy named Dave Wiederward, actually started one in Janesville. And I remember you and I went over there and checked out their Sports Hall of Fame and got some ideas from Dave, and it took off from there. But I never imagined in my wildest dreams that it would become this big of an event. I mean, it's a big event in Racine every year now.
Hmm. You were telling me that it sells out and that it actually is the major fundraiser for the Racine Heritage Museum.
Yes, which is why we need it to keep selling out. we get about 250, 300 people that come to the event every year. In addition to the inductees, we recognize outstanding scholar athletes, a male and a female from each Racine County High School every year. And we also recognize a person who's got deep roots in sports in the community with the Deep Roots Award, appropriately. And we have a lighthouse title, or trophy that we recirculate. This is the same lighthouse trophy that the three Racine High Schools circulated back in the 60s And it's been restored, and now it's awarded to the Racine County High School that has the most outstanding athletic record each year.
Wow, very good. So tell us about the process by which each year's list of inductees is assembled, and what kind of conversations go on, what kinds of things are weighed. I mean, how does this list sort of take shape?
I'm gonna send this one over to Gary.
Sounds good.
Pinch hitting here, using a sports term here.
Right.
But anybody in Racine County can nominate any individual that they would like, and they go to Chris's office, and he gathers them and then sends them along to a committee that reviews them, and then they're forwarded to the selection committee, and there's five of us on the selection committee, and there's about probably 30 or so, Chris, that we consider every year, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, there's a list of there's roughly 120 current pending nominations. All of them are outstanding athletes. The first committee that meets pares that list down to a selection list of the 30 folks that Gary's committee then battles it out to choose the four or five inductees each year.
And every year you think, okay, now we've been doing this for 7 or 8 years, whatever it may be.
Going into year eight.
And you think, like, okay, how many really outstanding athletes can a community like Racine or Kenosha have? And we don't have a problem. It's just incredible. It's like a bottomless pit. Mm-hmm. And it's just a joy to go through all these nominations. But the tough part is getting it down to the four or five individuals. And, you know, for the most part, the selection process has gone pretty smoothly. But I'm always fascinated that as soon as the names come out, I'll get at least one or two calls from people in the community goes, how can you overpass so-and-so, you know?
Yeah.
My ear's a little sore by the end of the phone conversation, but it's a fun process, and I think so far it's worked out really well.
When Chris spoke with some levity about, you know, battling it out
you
in terms of figuring out, you know, what those final names will be, what kinds of things get talked about in that process of battling? I mean, what sorts of things are you weighing and trying to decide, you know, this great athlete is even greater than this great athlete?
That's a good question. But, I mean, basically it's a sports hall of fame, and what that individual did during the course of his career obviously weighs importantly. Like, for instance, you know, next couple of years we'll be inducting Tony Romo. I think he's pretty good. I think he's got a chance getting in, you know, or Caron Butler, you know. I mean, these guys are no-brainers. They had, you know, marvelous professional careers. Then we also look at what they did in college, and then, of course, what they did in high school in Racine County. And then character is also included. There have been a couple of people that we have unfortunately couldn't include because of off-the-field issues. But for the most part, again, the people we have selected have been high-character people and exceptional athletes.
Are there ever choices that are posthumous, or by and large, are you trying to award this to athletes who are still with us to receive the award?
We've had this. It's open to anybody. We've had athletes. One of our folks was the first batter in the first World Series.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Ginger Beaumont, who came from Burlington. Yes.
Okay.
That's
and
going back in time.
Yeah, I was just saying. He was not there at the banquet.
No. Representing Ginger MoMA.
Yes.
His great, great, great.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, right.
So, yeah, we do go back because, you know, it is a history museum, so we can reach back in time.
Sure. And I suppose one important thing about this, too, is that there are certain headline names that everybody knows, but part of what happens here is you can, in a sense, resurrect a name that is maybe all but forgotten, but somebody who really did noteworthy things that for whatever reason might have been kind of obscured over time and get to be brought to the fore again.
Yeah, every year there's somebody that, you know, creeps in, and, you know, we tend to live in eras that we grew up in. I mean, look at those athletes as being something special. And what gets lost in all sports Hall of Fames, whether it's professional football, baseball, basketball, are guys that played maybe in the 30s, 40s, or 50s, where a lot of us never saw them, but they were exceptional athletes. And trying to get them, you know, into the Hall of Fame is difficult because they'll say, well, was he really that good? You know, he played 50, 60 years ago. There are a lot of really good athletes even then. So.
Wow. Now, when somebody is suggested to you and you don't immediately recognize the name, like Tony Romo, for instance, do you as committee members have to start to go digging for exactly what their statistics were? Or typically, when an athlete is nominated, do you already have most of the kind of hardcore facts that you
need? Yeah, the foundation is pretty much laid out in the nomination. I mean, the person that submits the nomination form gives a list of his accomplishments, his achievements, and so we got a pretty good basis to go off of at that point. But when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, when you're one of the four or five, then you got to really say, okay, what separates these individuals from the others? What puts them over the top? And that's where it becomes a little more of a challenge.
Right. I know that there's at least one woman in this year's list of inductees. Have there been women in most of the lists?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Racine's been blessed to have some really outstanding women athletes over the years, like LaTanya Sims is one of the best basketball players at the University of Wisconsin.
Our first year we inducted Kim Merritt, who won the
New
York and the Boston Marathons.
Nobody remembers that. I mean, it's amazing how many people do, but she was the first female winner from Racine, Wisconsin. Right. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about the Racine County Sports Hall of Fame, and its next big event will be the 25th of October. It's a major fundraiser, the major fundraiser for the Racine Heritage Museum. Chris Paulson is here representing them as their executive director. And sports writer Gary Wolfel is with us as well, who has a significant hand in this whole process of selecting the outstanding athletes who each year are inducted into the Racine County Sports Hall of Fame. So let's hear about this sterling class of 2018 that is going to be part of this year's Hall of Fame. There are some big, big names, and John Clay is one of them.
John Clay is one of them. And, if anyone who's ever followed high school football or college football knows that he's arguably the greatest high school running back ever in Wisconsin. I always make the comparison that you'll remember the guy, Jim Brown. Brown was a man among boys when he played. And when Johnny Clay was at Park High School in Racine, he was a man among boys. And when he came out of there, he was recruited by every big-time school in the country. And he ended up going to Wisconsin and was the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year. And it's amazing, the good football players that have come out of Racine and Kenosha. I mean, look at Melvin Gordon now from Kenosha. He's now with the Chargers, and Trey Waynes is starting for Minnesota. He's from Kenosha. And there's just been a lot of good players from this area.
It's really, really something. And I've read the great story about John Clay, who did not have a long career in the NFL, unfortunately, but it sure started out with a bang.
he had the misfortune of having a leg injury, and he just couldn't get over it. He was a big-sized running back. When those guys have leg injuries, they're tough to overcome, but his high school and his college careers were exceptional.
Yeah, that's just so exciting. I know that you were also saying a little something about Jack Teschner. Tell us about him.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. A guy who went to Racine Horlick High School and played a number of positions, and all of a sudden when he was a senior, they decided that he's going to become a pitcher, and goes to UW Oshkosh, which you wouldn't think is a baseball hotbed. But remember Jim Gantner, played for the Milwaukee Brewers? He was a guy that also played at UW Oshkosh, came out of a smaller school. But Teschner went on to play in the major leagues, and one of the teams that he played for was the San Francisco Giants. And he had a pretty good teammate by the name of Barry Bonds. But, again, we were talking about Johnny Clay with his injuries. Jack Teschner had his career sabotaged by injuries. He had an arm injury, and he ended up playing 4 or 5 years. But in that time, he did quite nicely. But definitely progressed well from high school to the major leagues.
Tell us where he is now.
He is now a police officer in Appleton, Wisconsin. And he's very active in the community, and I know some of the younger people might have saw the video that went viral of him pulling a prank. He thought he was going to arrest
a student at Appleton West High School, I believe it is, during halftime of a football game, and it was all a prank. And when the crowd found out it was a prank, they all went nuts. And this video, if anybody gets a chance to look at it, is pretty amazing.
Yeah. So he's a big man in that community in more ways than one.
Yes, well said.
Right. Let's talk about the woman, Camilla Jackson, who is being inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. What can you tell us about her?
Yep. Go ahead.
Camilla Jackson, outstanding track and field performer from Racine County, Horlick graduate. She had, WIA Division
Yeah, I. She was an outstanding long jumper, triple jumper. She won a couple state titles.
When anybody masters the triple jump,
yes,
that's like one of those things that just defies the laws of physics. And
yes.
It's just so amazing when anybody can master that.
Yeah, and to show you how talented she was, though, she went to Louisiana State University, which has produced some incredible athletes over the years, like Shaq, for instance, and Pete Maravich, going back in time. But anyways, she was one of the best track and field athletes at LSU, and she finished second 1 year in the indoor long jump, and then she also finished in the top five in the triple jump and the long jump. And one of the few track and field athletes from our area, Racine, Kenosha, even like Milwaukee, that has really excelled at the college level. Usually all the good track athletes come from California, Florida, Texas. Mm. And, you know, she beat the odds and had an outstanding career at LSU.
Mm. Very good. How about this gentleman by the name of Jerry Woods?
You want to say something?
I got to meet him. It was wonderful.
Yeah, he's great. You know, we were just talking about John Clay before. Park High School had another running back named Brent Moss, who also had a big-time career at Wisconsin. Yeah. And I talked to their coach, a guy named Phil Dobbs, who has been inducted into the Racine County Sports Hall of Fame. But he said Jerry Woods was the best all-around player he's ever had, which is speaking volumes when you think of John Clay and you think of Brent Moss and several other guys. But he went to Northern Michigan and kind of played in obscurity up there. But then he got into the NFL. He played for the Detroit Lions, and then he played for the Green Bay Packers as well. And you get to the major league level, you're pretty good. And even though he didn't have a long, ballyhooed career or anything like that, nevertheless, he got to the NFL, and that's quite an achievement.
Absolutely. And if I get the chance to speak to him, I'm not sure who it is I'll be able to connect with, but I would love to talk with him about his post-NFL football career when he played in some other leagues, because I've always wondered what that's...
Yes, he played overseas too.
And I just think it would be interesting to know what that feels like, from the position of an athlete on the field, and in what ways is it maybe remarkably different from the NFL, and what ways is it kind of the same thing?
And the other thing that's kind of unique about Jerry is that, when you think of football players, you think of these imposing specimens, But he really wasn't that big. He was only about 5'9", 5'10", and he played cornerback, and he played some special teams as well. So he beat some big odds to get to the NFL, and again, even though his career was short, he made it.
Wow, very good. So tell us about some of the other names that are on this list, Chris Paulson.
Well, we're inducting a coach, Harvey Rieckhoff, from Park High School. He's just a beloved and amazingly decorated coach, track and field coach.
Mm-hmm. It looks like he was quite a track athlete himself.
He was another triple jumper, in fact. Mm. So he took teams to state Division I state championships.
Yeah, he won. Any coach that wins a state title obviously is doing his job, but he won it three times. And again, you had mentioned how he was a great track performer. I think he finished second or third in the Big Ten Conference championships while attending the University of Wisconsin. And, I was actually thinking of Harvey the other day. I've encountered probably thousands of coaches during my time as a sports reporter, and Harvey Rieckhoff was one of the most impressive coaches I've ever come across. He's just a great communicator. He knew how to motivate athletes, and he was a high school coach, but he could have coached at any level. He was just that talented of a coach.
But maybe just loved coaching at that level where you really make a difference.
And it was his alma mater, so he felt good about coming back to Racine, and just did a wonderful job there.
Fantastic. Yeah, I suppose you've seen it all, including a lot of coaches who probably have no business coaching or coaches who were fabulous athletes themselves, but that does not mean you know the other side of the whistle and what it means to inspire other athletes.
Great point. And, you know, always remember, just to show you how we all think we know everything about sports, when back in the 70s, the Green Bay Packers hired Bart Starr as their head coach. Hmm. And there wasn't a happier person in the world than me. I was a young man at the time, and I go, Bart Starr, you know, this great quarterback. Packers are going to win championship after championship. And, you know, he never panned out as a coach. But your point is valid. I mean, it's just because you're a great athlete doesn't mean you're going to be a great coach.
Right. It's a whole different skill set. Just like just because you're a great singer doesn't mean you're going to be a great choir director. I mean,
correct.
Being the person up in front that waves your arms, that's a whole different thing than knowing how to sing. So, but back to sports. Mm-hmm. I keep jerking us over to music. Back to sports. Chris, who else is being inducted this year?
Well, we've covered the list of inductees. We've got some other recognitions that we're doing this year.
Have we talked about that Roots Award?
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is Deep Roots Award is going to Pete Hankus.
Oh,
this
okay.
year. Pete is the a race organizer, just a legendary career. He's
an icon in the running community. Yeah. I mean, if you talk to somebody up in Superior, Wisconsin, they might have heard him if they're into running. Mm-hmm. And he was the mastermind behind the Lighthouse Run, which is like one of the biggest running events in the state of Wisconsin. And I mean, you talk about people that love their jobs. This man loves running. You know, he's just constantly involved in running, whether it's locally, on the state level, or even nationally. So
he's just been at it for decades, and has just done some amazing things around the state. And so this Deep Roots Award recognizes a lifetime of service to athletics in the community.
Wonderful.
We're recognizing the 1967 and 69 Washington Park wrestling teams this
correct.
Year.
Correct. Yes.
And what did they achieve that merits that special note of
state championships?
State championships. And for wrestling teams coming out of Racine or Racine County and even, you know, Kenosha, that doesn't happen every day.
Right.
And these guys did two in 3 years. And, you know, we were talking at the outset of the show about going back in time. Well, I mean, 67, how many years ago was that? 50 years?
51.
Yeah,
that's the year I was born.
Yeah, there you go. He's such a young guy. Yeah. But, you know, people tend to forget, hey, there were some really, really good teams back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they tend to get lost. But for them to do what they did, to win two state championships, is pretty remarkable.
Right, absolutely. And especially in a sport like wrestling, where it's in a lot of ways a very kind of emotional and mental kind of sport, and all kinds of things can kind of go on that can derail someone who's had all this great success. I mean, when people are consistently excellent in the sport of wrestling, you've really accomplished something.
You're doing well. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. And then we've got a special recognition this year. The Racine Area Soccer Association turns 40 in 2018, and the Score Complex, which is kind of provides 20 fields for 2,500 games a year in Franksville is turning 25 this year, and so we're looking at kind of just recognizing organized soccer in the community.
Wow!
And that's been really what we're going to start this year doing, and maybe make the announcement at the event is that we're really working to collect stories from the early days of soccer in the community. It was very much a grassroots effort. Interest in soccer was brought to the community from outside. There was a family from Texas that organized some teams around in Franksville schools. Parents would organize themselves to create teams, and they developed into this. You know, the amazing popularity of soccer today starts out with about 200 or 300 kids playing on kind of loosely organized teams and fields where their parents would come out and chalk the fields in the morning and put up nets and they brought in coaches, and it's just, you know, it's grown so dramatically, you know, in its early years. And as a I was in fifth grade during the first years of RASA and played during those years.
Okay.
And I remember freezing on fields from Cliffside Park all the way down to Tremper and Kenosha. And so as the popularity of the sport grew, the need for a centralized location was made very evident. And so 15 years after the organization of RASA, they opened the Score Complex.
Wow, fantastic. So that will be, in a sense, honored at the banquet as well.
Yes, we're starting a year to kind of gather and preserve that story.
Wow, that's a great, great idea. So explain what will happen on the evening of the 25th.
There will be, people can arrive at 5:45. There's a cocktail hour. There's a silent auction. There will be a raffle. It's a chance to meet these athletes and these inductees. There's a wonderful dinner. The event's taking place at the Festival Hall at Racine Civic Center. It's going to be Thursday, October 25th. The MC for the evening, again, is our popular MC, Chuck Freeman, who's the host of, he's a sports radio host on The Fan out of Milwaukee.
WSSP in Milwaukee, WSSP. Yeah, in the morning show there. And
does a great job emceeing the event. And again, it'd be a wonderful dinner. It's a really nice family event.
Yeah, you know what's really nice about it, Greg, is the speeches themselves. You know, people came there and they've read about these people, but they've never seen them up close and never really heard them speak. And some of the speeches that have been delivered over the years have just been mind-boggling. I mean, you know, really emotional, real touching. And I've gone to a bunch of Hall of Fame inductions. In fact, I went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, about, I don't know, 2 months ago. It's the highlight of the event. You can get food anywhere. You can, you know, dress up and go anywhere. But to hear these people talk about their careers and share their life experiences and their emotions, it makes for a really good night.
Sure. And the videos. We also
– And the videos, yeah.
We produce a biographical video of each inductee. And those are debuted at the event, and they are permanently available at the exhibit at the museum afterwards.
Oh, fantastic.
That is really cool. Yeah, Chris's exhibit is outstanding. If anybody gets a chance to go to it, by all means, go to it.
So if people are interested in attending this year's Racine County Sports Hall of Fame banquet on October 25th, what do they need to do?
They can call the museum, 262-636-3926, or visit the website. It's probably the easiest way, racineheritagemuseum.org, and you'll find a button that'll direct you right to where you can reserve your tickets online.
Fantastic. We hope a lot of people will do that. And again, I want to reiterate that I'm going to be reaching out to at least a couple of the inductees in the next couple of weeks and hoping to do a couple of phone interviews with some of these great, great athletes. Chris Paulson, it's good to have you back on the morning show, and I know we'll be talking with you again and again as interesting things continue to happen at the museum. And Gary Wolfel, I hope this is not the last time you'll be on the morning show. It would be really fun to have you back if you're open to that
possibility. Oh, I'd love to come here anytime.
Right, and we won't talk about opera. We'll talk about sports, I promise. So, okay.
It'd be a one-way conversation.
Yeah, right. So, Gary Wolfel, great to have you here, and look forward to having you back on the morning show sometime.
Thank you very much.
Great. Part two of the morning show coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. And it's 8:44. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And for the second part of today's morning show, I'm very, very glad that we can be speaking to two people involved in what promises to be a most extraordinary theatrical experience at Carthage, namely the presentation of a fresh, modern adaptation of a great Greek classic by Sophocles' Ajax. Not the cleanser, but rather the military hero, a deeply flawed, troubled military hero. A story known very, very well, but brought into kind of the modern light of day, courtesy of two talented Carthage students, Melody Abbott and one of our morning show guests, Lawrence Gums, a classics major and also himself a veteran of combat. And Martin McClendon is the director of this production, which opens this weekend and I believe runs the following weekend as well. Gentlemen, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So, Martin, talk about how this took shape in the Carthage season. First of all, the theater department has done a number of different things that have been in one way or another adjacent to themes related to veterans and warfare and combat and so on. So I suppose in some ways this is just one in a succession of really meaningful projects for the department.
Sure. And thanks for having us on today. I think the only thing I can really take credit for is just having the germ of an idea back in 2015, just spurred by my interest in our ongoing wars on terror and in starting a dialogue about those and about the, you know, the issues that people face coming back from doing their service, whether they're deployed or not, whether they're in combat or not. Everybody is, you know, has that experience, and it can be a hard transition. And I'm not a veteran. I don't claim to be, so I just want to put that out there, too. But in 2015, we started working on trying to bring these stories to light. And it's been a really transformational process for our students, I think. In terms of how this took shape, more specifically for Ajax, the guy sitting to my left, Lawrence, is the one who really brought this to life. Once he can talk more about that, but once he and Melody had created this translation, obviously I was aware that they were doing it, and they had received a SURE grant from Carthage, a summer undergraduate research grant, to pursue this work. They asked me to, you know, take a look at it, and I was really impressed with what I saw, and so I brought it to my department, and we all looked it over and thought this was something for many reasons that we wanted to support and work on and then actually produce, not just workshop, which we did, and sort of, you know, give feedback for, but then we're like, hey, why don't we celebrate and lift up these Carthage students doing this amazing work, get interdepartmental, right, with classics and theater, and also, again, keep the conversation going about veterans' issues. And so for all those reasons, I think we kind of jumped at the chance to do this, as well as the fact that it's a really good translation. I mean, it's very effective. So that's my story.
Fantastic. Lawrence Gums, let's get your story. First of all, let's make sure people understand something of your own background. That you come to this not only as a classic student at Carthage, but also as somebody who has seen and experienced combat. Just, I'm afraid we don't have a lot of time, but at least briefly tell us about that part of your background.
That part of my background, I guess. So for me, this whole thing has been a long process, starting in 2010 when I joined. I was active duty for 4 years, deploying in 2012. And then I joined the Guard so I could go to college and focus on my family and maintain insurance, and I still like the Army. So from 2014 to now, I've been in the Guard. During those 8 years, I've been affected, or I've witnessed suicide both in combat and outside of it. So it's something that, I don't know, it's home. And I worked with Martin on our Afghanistan Wisconsin show, and that ended up giving me the ability to look at my experience from an outside perspective as an actor portrayed me on the stage. Mm. And it gave me this catharsis, right? And I was really grateful for the theater. And a lot of people that I knew who I deployed with or that I was serving with currently, they, I don't know, for lack of a better term, they have their own problems, right? Or a better phrase. So I wanted to figure out a way to bring my background in classics together and theater which I knew worked. One of my classics professors had mentioned the Ajax being used as a form of therapy so that combat veterans could get an outside perspective in a low-stakes environment, reading their experiences through the device of Ajax rather than themselves or the personal connections that they have around them. So I decided to take a look at the play and look at the work that's been done. In 2015, a soldier in the Guard took his own life from our company, and that was kind of the enough's enough, I'm going to do something about this, you know. So I embarked on the translation. My co-translator, Melody Abbott, heard about the project. Her and I had a conversation about it, and it was kind of a mutual thing of, let's work on this, you know. She had her own stakes in the project, and she was an invaluable asset and really helped to bring life to the translation, the adaptation, and the production. So,
and now you get to see it take life on stage, which has to be incredible, amazing.
Yeah.
Martin McClendon, explain in a sense what it means to retranslate something like this play that obviously has been already translated, and I'm guessing has been translated maybe any number of times, and the ways in which this translation is different and distinctive from those that have come before.
Sure. So Sophocles wrote hundreds of plays, but only a handful survive. And we can make an assumption that the ones that survive do so for a reason. I think that they still speak to the generations of people who are preserving them over those years and decades and millennia, maybe not millennia, but hundreds of years anyway, centuries. And so translating, right, ultimately has to be able to bring out those things that were true 2,500 years ago and the reason why we're still doing the play today. A lot of the more, shall I say, sort of academic translations, right, are well-meaning in that they try to preserve the poetry of the Greek, you know, the structure of the Greek poetry, as well as get the ideas across. And I think for many of these, it doesn't quite succeed when it comes to performance. Just having read several of them, they didn't flow off the page as well. And so I think what Melody and Larry have been able to achieve is not only to bring a really modern 21st century kind of syntax to it that's very accessible, but also, you know, Larry, again, is using the lens of his experiences to, because it is not only a translation but an adaptation, right? Mm. It isn't word for word, if I can say that.
Yeah.
And so what Larry's been able to do specifically is work with Melody to, and also on his own in terms of writing, to, again, try to focus a little bit more on these aspects that Sophocles first noticed among his fellow Athenians who were veterans, right? And the play would have been performed for, you know, thousands of Athenian citizens at this great festival of Dionysus, right? It was an award winner there, and many, if not all of them, would have been veterans or at least have been even active in the service of the defense of Athens and would have experienced the kind of traumatic events that Sophocles sort of portrays. I hope that's answering your question.
To a large extent, anyway. We should maybe explain, if we can, in about 45 seconds or so, kind of the heart of the story of Ajax and why it is ripe for connection with things like post-traumatic stress disorder and suicide and so on. Explain what happened to Ajax that led him to experience such trauma.
45 seconds. All right.
Maybe 60.
Yeah. So starting with the, I think it's important to understand the author who wrote it, right? Sophocles was voted to be a general twice during the 80 years of war that he grew up in. There was the Persian War. After that ended, we had the Peloponnesian War. So he was totally familiar with it. He was a foot soldier before that, right? And Ajax is considered one of his earliest plays. So the Festival of Dionysus, where this would have been presented, was being presented to citizen soldiers who had all grown up with war, who had all fought in war, and who all all understood the themes of war. And he wanted to win, right? I mean, you win the competition after presenting three tragedies and a satyr play to lighten the mood. It was this comedy thing. And whoever presented the best shows won the festival, right? So ultimately, he wanted to connect with his audience. So how do you do that? You create something that they will understand based off their experience. So Ajax is one of the most formidable Greeks in the Greek army in the Trojan War. He is called the Shield because he is often facing the toughest enemy so that the rest of the Greeks don't have to. Him and his Marines go out, they fight, they hold the line, and they're unmoved. He was tough. He did not mince words. He didn't like to talk. He just went out and he fought, and that was his language. That was his life. Sophocles picked it up because in the 9th year of the Trojan War, Achilles, his cousin and the best of the Greeks, was killed in battle. Ajax recovered his body from the Trojan behind enemy lines and pulled him out, fighting through the Trojans. Afterwards, there was a competition to award the greatest of the Greeks Achilles' armor. Ajax was naturally considered himself to be the person who would receive the armor based off the fact that he was considered the strongest. He had the epithet or the title of the strongest of the Greeks next to Achilles. Hmm. And now that Achilles was gone, goes to me. During the competition, he by a landslide won all the physical events, and then there was one final event, and that was a speech. Ajax, again, not one to mince words, after a little bit of an awkward silence, says, "I am Ajax," looks the judges in the eyes, scans the audience, and walks off stage, thinking that that's enough to represent how he should be awarded this armor. Odysseus is the next in line to speak, and with the help of Athena, a goddess, he moves the audience to tears, pulling out empathetic responses and using his ability to speak to his advantage, and ends up being awarded the armor of Achilles over Ajax. At that moment, Ajax silently walks off to his tent, trying to think of how he can come back from this, the armor to him is everything that represents the last 9 years of fighting. It represents all the honor he's gained, all the men he's lost, all the men he's saved, and it really is a device in which he can cope and mourn, and it's the only thing that matters to him. So not having that, what is he supposed to do?
And so what he does with that defeat is what leads to some destructive
traffic of our stage, as Shakespeare says. Yeah.
Is the adaption in any way a modern-day adaption in which we're seeing on the stage what we would think of as modern soldiers, or is it kept in the day of Ajax, in a sense?
The answer is yes and no. So what we've done is the weapons and the sort of ethos of that are all very ancient, right? Swords and spears and so forth. But we've definitely updated the look of things. Our student costume designer, Emily Parker, has done a great mashup of sort of ancient pieces of Greek armor and greaves and things and modern body armor, modern, you know, fatigues and boots. So we're really trying again to connect back to a modern audience who may not be as receptive to seeing people running around in togas and so forth. I mean, you know, that's definitely a look and a choice that you can do. But we decided we want to make sure that we understand we're reflecting on today and yesterday both.
Mm. It sounds absolutely fascinating, and it sounds like it will be a tremendously powerful experience. It's this weekend and the next weekend.
Yep.
And what do people do if they want to attend this?
Oh, well, www.carthage.edu/tickets, and you can just go there and pick your seats online, pay for them, just pick them up and get there a little early and have some Starbucks first, you know, in our lobby, and then come on out and see the show.
Will there be a talk back after any of the performances?
Yes, we'll have a brief talk back after each of the performances. Just if we want to hear some, if people want